Hi everybody, this is Isaac. You know what you're listening to. This is the Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture Podcast. And you're listening to the special Nexium Hollywood Sex Cults and Illuminati Symbolism episode. We're going to go through Nexium, otherwise known as NXIVM. I'm going to try to break it down because it's kind of a convoluted story. But I'm going to try to break down the essentials of it, so if you're not familiar, just relax. We're going to go through it. I'm going to chime in with my sort of insight into what's going on, what could be potentially going on with the Illuminati, MKUltra, secret societies, alter egos, the vow, magical sigils. It's all here, folks. It's all here. It's all the things we've been talking about. They all find their way into this case. Now, it's very interesting because I compare this Nexium case to musicians and entertainment and films. People say, Isaac, you're a little crazy, man. Like, why do you think just because someone has the Illuminati triangle, they're Illuminate confirm? Well, if these artists were so creative and so original, why are they doing the same things over and over? Why are the most avant-garde artists just doing the same stuff over and over? They all choose the satanic imagery and they all think they're so, you know, rebellious and outside of the box. But it's all part of the big agenda, the big Illuminati agenda. And if you're unfamiliar with the big agenda, you better get with the program. Wake up! Sorry, I tried to harness my Alex Jones. I was actually listening to some old Hour of the Time Bill Cooper stuff. You can find it on archive.com or whatever that website is where they upload all kinds of stuff. They've got Hour of the Time, and if you ever listen to that, I like his intensity. I like his passion. He was kind of like pre-Alex Jones. Do you see Alex Jones is getting in trouble for talking about Sandy Hook? Yeah, the families from Sandy Hook are suing him for the stuff he's been saying about Sandy Hook being a false flag and crisis actors and all that stuff. And while I don't like Alex Jones, nor do I listen to Alex Jones, I mean, sometimes he's all right, you know, but he's just too much for me. But that bothers me because, like, I don't subscribe to the whole false flag child actors thing typically. Is it possible? Sure, anything's possible. But he's a little more influential than most. But to me, it's like, you know, this goes back to what I talked about on the last episode with the First Amendment rights. They're trying to chip away at it. They want to control the narrative. So I'm going to go ahead and guess that Alex Jones is indeed going to get in trouble. Maybe some kind of fine. I don't think he's going to go to prison, but something's going to happen. They're going to make an example out of him because he is the most sort of notoriously known conspiracy theorist. And they want to fire a shot across the bow, as it were. But we're not here to talk about Alex Jones. We're going to talk about Nexium. To understand Nexium, you have to understand the key players involved. First, we've got Keith Rainier. This guy here, he said he was reading by the age of 2. A full concert pianist by the age of 13, and the smartest man in the world with an IQ of 240. Well, congratulations. He also started the Consumer's Byline in the 1990s with an actor from Green Acres as the spokesman. Now, Consumer Byline, they were basically Costco. They filled wholesale orders for customers to save money on products, but it turned out it was a pyramid scheme. Now, if you look at... Now, it gets dicey here, folks, okay? I'm not going to jump around much. I've organized this in the most sort of logical timeline fashion that I could. But, you know, in the 90s, Keith Raniere had the consumer byline pyramid scheme. Then he started Nexium, which is what you've seen on the news and such, NXIVM. And I looked up the Roman numeral equivalent to that, and it didn't really strike me as anything in particular. I think, in fact, the letter M is not in the Roman numeral system. But I was trying to find a reason why they do that. Not a good explanation yet. But I wanted to release this podcast because something very interesting happened today in the news, and that was the final trigger that I said, okay, we're going for it. Let's do this. So I've been actually researching this for a few weeks now. So Keith Raniere, world's smartest man, pyramid scheme guy, started Nexium, and this was a sort of new age kind of nonsense where he would heal people through brainwashing and getting all of a person's information and then later using it against them, which we've seen allegedly Church of Scientology doing. If you read some of the people that escape from the COS, not to be confused with Church of Satan, Sir Church of Scientology, they say that kind of stuff happens. And also, I'm going to preface this whole podcast with allegedly, because this is just my reading of what's been going on, and none of this has been sort of proven through trial yet. That happens in October 2018. So Raniere started Nexium. It was an empowerment program in 1998 with Nancy Salzman, and things were going pretty well. There were whisperings of it being a cultish environment at the time, but it's been going on since 98 with pretty much no setbacks, right? Now, if you look on Wikipedia, they have a link to a Forbes article, which I've clicked on the link and it was dead, so I don't know if I can confirm this, but it says in 2003, Forbes magazine reported that some 3,700 people had taken part in Nexium's executive success program and named Sheila Johnson, co-founder of BET, Antonio Novello, former Surgeon General of the United States, Stephen Cooper of Enron, and Anna Christina Fox, daughter of former Mexican President Vicente Fox. So that's a pretty interesting list, right? In 2010, a trainer named Susan Dones left the Nexium group and alleged that Raniere was actually being a very naughty boy. He was using the program to stalk students while fleecing money from them. Nexium denied the allegations all the way up until 2017, and that is what triggered all of the latest talkings about Nexium, with New York Times articles, 2020 stories, publishing these inner workings of this cult. Now, if you go to Keith Raniere, has a video on YouTube called The Authentic Human, and I watched this whole thing. It talks about creativity and being unique and your unlimited potential, and of course how to be authentic, and all of this new age psychobabble is obviously subjective to the viewer. I mean, it feels like it's kind of like any other work of the new age. It could be very inspirational, could be good for you. As the interviewer Allison Mack portrayed, and we're going to talk about Allison Mack in a second, she was the actress on Smallville. Or it's complete nonsense and it's just pushing an agenda. Again, subjective. I've watched and read a lot of New Age psychobabble, and it's actually been fairly helpful. So I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but like, knowing what I know now about Raniere based on the testimony of various people, he seems like a scumbag. So I'm going to call it nonsense. So another player we have to talk about is Sarah Edmondson. In May 2017, she decided she was going to leave Nexium, and that's when the New York Times published an article about this. In that article, I'll just read you what it says. It says, in May, Sarah Edmondson, began to recoil from her embrace of the secret society. Her husband, Anthony Ames, who was also a Nexium member, learned about her branding, and the couple both wanted out. Before quitting, Mr. Ames went to Nexium's offices in Albany to collect money he said the group owed him. He had his cell phone in his pocket and turned on its recorder. On the recording, Mr. Ames tells another member that Miss Edmondson was branded and that other women told him about handing over collateral. "This is criminal," Mr. Ames says. The voice of a woman, who Mr. Ames said is Lauren Salzman, is heard trying to calm him. "I don't think you are open to having a conversation," she said. "You are absolutely right. I am not open to having a conversation," he replied. "My wife got branded." And of course, this branding, which we're going to talk about later, here's a hint, it's a magical sigil. That branding is kind of what seemed to push this thing into the mainstream for some odd reason. Now, before we're going to revisit a little bit on Sarah Edmondson, but we have to take a short detour. And I told you this is going to get messy, but this is the way it's going to be, okay? We're going to talk about the Bronfman kids. I'm probably not pronouncing that right. It's Bronfman. The Bronfman kids got involved. And this is of importance to me because I've seen this name in my research. Okay. And I will. So reading the article about this, it talks about Rainier's followers were in the secret society, and there was a website at the time run by a businessman named Frank Parlato Jr. Now, he had been in a legal battle with Sarah and Claire Bronfman, who are members of Nexium, but they are known for being the daughters of Edgar Bronfman, who was the now deceased chairman of Seagram, the company. Now, in 2011, the Bronfman sisters had sued Mr. Parlato, who they hired as a consultant, saying that he defrauded them of $1 million. Then in 2015, the Justice Department indicted him on charges of fraud, including defrauding the Bronfmans. He denied the claims, case was pending, and he started this website called The Frank Report, which is active right now. You can go there right now, and they have just tons and tons of articles about Nexium. Which, after you listen to this podcast, you can use it to as a good jump off point, because if you go right into all of this, it's too much going on. So he started this website, which he used to lambaste the prosecutors, Mr. Rainier and the Bronfmans. So in early June, Mr. Parlato published the first in a torrent of salacious posts under the headline Branded Slaves and Master Rainier. Now, like I said, we're going to come back to the branding and all that sort of master-slave talk, but the Bronfmans are of interest because they are involved in the Seagram organization through blood, obviously. Their father was running it. And I alluded to the Illuminati family bloodlines of Seagram, perhaps, in their influence with my Kanye West TMZ rant episode I just released for the podcast, because the son, Benjamin Bronfman, he produced a couple of Kanye West songs, like New Slaves, which actually got him a nomination for an Emmy, by the way. So it's interesting 6 degrees of separation between Kanye West and Nexium right there, okay? Now, I previously talked about Seagram in Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. That's the hip-hop conspiracy book. And I'm going to read you the excerpt from that. "Even though the rap lyrics have negative aspects, the corporations still feed into it because there is a profit to be made. Civil rights leader Dolores Tucker exposed a connection between Time Warner and gangster rap during her campaign against the music genre. This connection was the fact that Time Warner owned 50% of Interscope Records, the financial backers of Death Row Records. Interscope was dropped by Time Warner due to the negative publicity of rap music. Isn't that funny? It's completely not the way it is today. Anyways, back to the story. But immediately picked up by Seagram's for $200 million. Seagram's also owned all sorts of ventures, including Universal Pictures and its theme parks, alcohol, etc. Seagram's was trying to expand into the entertainment industry, but eventually had to sell itself to Vivendi. Now here's where I inserted a quote from Suge Knight regarding the Death Row label drop from Seagram's. You gotta remember, this is a different time. This is the 1990s, okay? A lot different. Our rappers weren't white with face tattoos back then. Okay. Suge Knight said, Seagram, which makes most of its money manufacturing alcohol, says they don't want to put out hard rap music because of the effect it might have on kids. But let me ask you this. What kills more kids each year? Is it rap music or is it alcohol? Ha! Zing! Get him, Suge. Alright, so then in the book I go through a little bit of connections with the Seagram's family tied to the Illuminati based on Tex Mars's book, Codex Magica. Because, let me just read it. There's an article on his website called Jerusalem, Blood and Dynasty, a look at Edgar Bronfman Sr. And he claims that the Seagram's founding family, the Bronfmans, are part of a Jewish Zionist agenda. Ugh, I get uncomfortable when we go into this territory because that's a requisite for all conspiracy theorists, is you have to discuss the Jewish Zionist plot, okay? I wouldn't even say I've read a moderate amount of stuff about this. I've heard a lot about it. I see what people are saying. But to me, it kind of muddies the waters a little bit too much. Could it be a plot? Maybe. I mean, I get what people are saying when they point out the evidence. Is the message 100% completely lost? Because people think that's a very sort of bigoted statement to make. Yes. And for me, I don't know. Like, it's kind of a cop out, but like, I don't really want to label that, because I don't want to label all Jewish people as part of this Zionist agenda, or I don't want to put support into these hate groups that everything's this big Jew plot. So, whatever. But that's Tex Mars. That's what he said. And then he has an advertisement in there, a picture of a Crown Royal whiskey, which was a Seagram's brand, with a serpent wrapped around the bottle, and it says, Tempted. You know, obviously that's symbolic of satanic worship, right? Now, why am I talking about all this? Jews and rappers and stuff. Because it's curious, because in the book, I was talking about the progression of rap music as it relates to white culture consuming the rap music. During the 1990s, white rap, rap consumed by the white people, it was sort of an explosive time, because 3/4 of all rap albums at the time were sold to suburban white teenagers. Which, hey, I was part of that statistic too, okay? The violent content is what they claim drove the sales. Because we had artists like N.W.A. and Dr. Dre. And, you know, I remember that. I remember the first time I heard Dr. Dre's The Chronic on cassette tape back in the day. And, man, it blew my mind. I don't know if I've heard an album that mind expanding since then. I mean, maybe it was because I was young. I mean, but it's pretty timeless. You can listen to it today. It's pretty good still. And I'd heard N.W.A. before that. But like, for some reason, The Chronic really spoke to me. But yeah, anyways, basically rap music became a viable sales model because the white culture got involved, and they did it primarily because of the violent content. Now, in what was almost a prophetic statement, I continue to talk about the connections to the Hegelian dialect. That's the sort of back and forth, okay? that they present two different sort of like a duality, two different opposites, two different extremes, with the hopes that you kind of go towards the middle, but you still proceed down a path that they have prescribed. Sort of like a good cop, bad cop. In the book it says, an example for this could be illustrated as such. The record companies push gangster rap with lyrics about gun violence. The same company who owns the record company owns a media outlet, so they put all gun violence stories to the top, under the credo, if it bleeds, it leads. The problem here is clearly gun violence. The problem comes to a head when it starts to affect the masses, we'll say the middle-class suburban white demographic. This is done through a coordinated false flag event that is staged, and we'll say that it is a school shooting in the heartland. The people are now in fear, that's the reaction, and demand a solution for safety. The people who own the record company and media outlet pay lobbyists to hook politicians up to PAC funds, and they propose the idea of gun control. That's the solution. So you got the problem, reaction, solution formula: guns, fear, gun control. That's the David Icke taught me that, okay? And that's a great way of demonstrating the Hegelian dialect. And I'll be damned if that's not what's been going on, okay? Steve McKeever, founder of Hidden Beach Recordings, said, quote, 80% of the media that we hear, read, or see is controlled by six companies. And I'll bet it's changed. I bet it's less than that now. But it's interesting because if you look at Childish Gambino's This Is America track, Don't Get You Slippin', nah, you could say that it is a narrative for black men selling an image that the white devil slave masters want them to perpetuate for the higher agenda, the Illuminati agenda. Now, they're selling the guns, fear, and ultimately control. That's what this is all about. Now, I wrote the hip-hop book in 2014, and the school mass shootings, primarily in suburban white America, have been on the rise ever since. Now, I know I'm saying a lot of very triggerable words and terms and race, and in fact, there's a poll I put on my Twitter asking people if they say the N-word when they're rapping along to a song, if they feel like it's okay to say that. And I said I was going to talk about it on the next podcast. It's going to be on the next regular podcast. I'm actually still running the poll right now. I still got another day because I want to see what people think. I want to know, because I got some very interesting ideas about this. Anyways, so let's get back to Nexium here. We got off track a little bit. Seagrams, that's the Illuminati, we'll say, and the family has all their connections. The daughters are in Nexium, okay? And this is, and I'm about to tell you the reason why I'm making this episode right now is because on Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018, there was an article on Daily Beast about Nexium. And Frank Parlato, remember, that's the guy, the businessman that's getting sued by the Bronfmans and, you know, Keith Rainier or whatever. And he's got that website talking all about their doings. He claimed that the Bronfmans might be intimidating ex-Nexium members. And this is based on a Vice article where it says, quote, they brought up a number of domain names to attack some of the witnesses. If Jane Doe 1 or 2 decided not to testify, that would certainly hurt the case against Rainier. I think she would do whatever it takes to see that those witnesses don't testify. Now, if none of that sort of like stands out to you, let me rewind back to, I thought I talked about on a previous podcast, this documentary called Tickled. It was on HBO, and it was, if I didn't talk about it, I'm going to talk about it right now. There was this, it's the weirdest thing. There's these videos of these like young half-naked guys like wrestling around on a bed tickling each other. It's like a tickle contest or something. And it, you know, it looks kind of like porno, but they're not fully nude, just like shirts off kind of thing. And this guy, this journalist, sort of like was doing a documentary about this, trying to get more information about it because it seemed like kind of a, you know, funny taboo subject. And what he found was that there was this sort of like hidden hand that was running all this, these tickled video shoots that no one could track down. And what he was doing was he was finding young guys who were hard up for some cash. He'd pay them a little bit of money to do this tickling thing and film it under what the victims are saying, sort of like the auspices that it wouldn't go online. It was just for somebody. And next thing they know, it's online and it's affecting these people's lives, and they go to stop it and they're like, hey, take these videos down. But then the hidden hand of the tickle arena there starts harassing them. And, you know, spoiler alert, but it turns out they find the guy who's doing this stuff, and he's like some douchebag who inherited too much money. And now, like, he gets off on this for some reason. I think he gets off on the sort of blackmail element of it, the power over these young guys that get duped into doing this. And he intimidates them by, he'll have, like, if we'll say John Doe, since they're using the Doe for the Jane Doe name, you know, if John Doe goes and does the tickle thing, makes $500, then next thing you know, John Doe sees his video on YouTube, and he goes to the hidden hand of the tickle company and says, hey, you can have that video. I don't want that video on YouTube. Well, they'll, hidden hand there, will put a, make a website domain, johndoeticklexposed.com, and it'll be all the videos, and, you know, they'll find his family and share it with them or whatever. And it, like, it's really screwing with these people's lives. It's really weird. You should watch it if you haven't. It's called Tickled, HBO. Anyways, that sounds what's going on here. Are the two connected? I don't know. No one's talking about it. I mean, I'm just a jackass in my house recording a podcast. But Parlato, his theory is in keeping with the legal documents filed on the subject of Allison Max Bale, who we're going to talk about next, by the way, in which the government spoke of evidence that after its investigation was reported in the press, high-ranking members of DOS, that's the NXIVM Inner Secret Society group, which, again, we'll talk about here in a minute. High-ranking members of DOS undertook efforts to undermine potential witnesses, including by registering domain names such as witnessnameexposed.com with the intention of publishing damaging information regarding those witnesses. So if anyone listening knows the people that put together that Tickled documentary, by God, get them on the horn. I actually tried to get that Frank Parlato guy to come on the podcast, but he's a little busy right now, okay? All right, so we talked about, let me round this back up. Because if you're like me, you need someone to talk nice and slow and keep summarizing, because I've got ADD. So Keith Raniere, he's the world's smartest man, started the pyramid scheme thing that failed and then went to NXIVM, this sort of new age guru stuff. Then the Bronfman kids are involved. That's the Seagram's family girls. And they were like fleecing their dad with all this money, by the way, from what I saw on like Nightline. They were taking like millions of his money and giving it to Keith Raniere. Sure, I'm really sure that's what the Seagram's father wanted when he was doing all that work trying to make money. And now we got Allison Mack. She's the actress that was on Smallville. That's that TV show about Superman that I don't know who watched it, not me. But she was on Wilfred. I watched Wilfred. That was the show with Elijah Wood where he's friends with his dog. But his love interest on the show was a girl named Amanda, played by Allison Mack. Now, what's curious here before we go into Allison Mack, Elijah Wood, if you recall, was the guy who was talking about all the pedophilia in Hollywood. he said, clearly something major was going on in Hollywood. It was all organized. There are a lot of vipers in this industry, people who only have their own interest in mind. There is darkness in the underbelly. Corey Feldman also talked about this in 2012. He told a British tabloid that when he was 14, older men had been lurking around like vultures. So anyways, we're going to talk about that kind of stuff later too. We got a lot talking about later. Let's talk about it later. So basically there's these child actors, they're in Hollywood. They're all telling us that this stuff happens. And now Elijah Wood, Six Degrees of Separation, Kanye West, Smallville, Allison Mack. So Allison Mack, she was arrested on April 20th, 420. And the Department of Justice wrote about this. It says, the actor Allison Mack was arrested this morning on an indictment unsealed today in federal court in Brooklyn, charging her and Keith Raniere, also known as Vanguard, with sex trafficking conspiracy and forced labor conspiracy. Yikes. As alleged in the indictment, Allison Mack recruited women to join what was purported to be a female mentorship group that was, in fact, created and led by Keith Raniere. The victims were then exploited both sexually and for their labor to the defendant's benefit. Now, she also, I mean, besides being the actress on Smallville, turned out she was on Twitter trying to openly recruit other actresses like Emma Watson. You know, what's her name? Hermione from Harry Potter. So there's this weird thing in Hollywood, right? And she's recruiting the other actresses. And I just want to put that in the back of your mind, because in my wrap-up analysis, it's all going to come together as to why that could be something else, okay? And her last tweet on Twitter before she got arrested was of Marina Abramovich. You know her. She's the witch who inspired Lady Gaga, and she did the Cakes of Light, Aleister Crowley, semen artwork, cannibalism, eating all kinds of weird body fluids. Now, the arrests. This is the most interesting thing, because I've read a lot of articles about NXIVM, but nothing is as clear as the Department of Justice's website. And they sum up the whole case here, okay? And they break down this whole thing pretty succinctly. So it says, according to the court filings, during the past 20 years, Raniere established a series of purported self-help programs within his umbrella organization, NXIVM. NXIVM is based in Albany, New York, and has operated centers in the U.S., Mexico, Canada, and South America. NXIVM maintains features of a pyramid scheme, as its courses cost thousands of dollars each, and participants, NXIVMs, are encouraged to pay for additional classes and to recruit others to take classes in order to rise within the ranks of NXIVM. So, that sounds a lot like Freemasonry or something, right? Or secret societies or Church of Scientology. Maybe a blend of all three. You've got this initiation system and a ranking system and, the pyramid scheme. Now, it says a number of NXIVMs were residents of the Eastern District of New York when they were recruited, and NXIVM has held promotional recruiting events in Brooklyn. Allison Mack is credited in publicly available materials with co-creating a NXIVM program called The Source, which recruited actors. As detailed in court filings in 2015, Raniere created a secret society within NXIVM called DAS, an acronym that stands for a Latin phrase that loosely translates to Lord Master of the Obedient Female Companions, or the Vow. DAS operated with levels of women slaves headed by their masters. Slaves were expected to recruit slaves of their own, thus becoming masters themselves, who in turn owed service not only to their own masters, but also the masters above them in the DAS pyramid. Raniere stood alone at the top of the pyramid. Other than Raniere, all members of DAS were women. Mac is one of the women in the first level of the pyramid immediately below Rainier. Mac and other DOS masters recruited DOS slaves by telling them that they were joining a women-only organization that could empower them and eradicate purported weaknesses that the Nexium curriculum taught were common in women. Mac and other DOS masters concealed Rainier's status at the top of the pyramid from the new recruits. Ugh, so many words. So, the pyramid scheme that he started in the 90s with the consumer byline, you know, the Costco pyramid scheme, it segued itself all the way through to a sort of sexual Costco, okay? That's what it was. He made a sexual Costco. It's a very tweetable moment. Now, here's where it gets interesting, and this is what made me really pay attention to Nexium. It says, as a precondition to joining DOS, women were required to provide collateral, which included highly damaging information about friends and family members, nude photographs, and or rights to the recruits' assets. DOS slaves were told that their collateral could be released for any number of reasons, including telling anyone about DOS's existence or leaving DOS. Now, and then it goes into a whole explanation of this, whatever. And the if your mind isn't putting it together yet, like, you should see elements of like MK Ultra in here, and the Fappening, Celebrity Gate, whatever you want to call that. That I think it was 4chan. There was a website that had all the nudes of all the actresses, like Jennifer Lawrence, and the name escapes me. But anyways, and I'm talking about that in the wrap up. But like, the collateral thing, I mean, that's what, it just sticks out in my mind, this collateral of the nude photographs. And if you leave the cult, they'll release them publicly. And that's kind of what happened. This anonymous sort of source uploaded all these photos. Now, if we look at, well, we're going to go over one more piece of information, one more sort of compilation of information based on the Nightline special. We find out that Keith Rainier used this alter ego called Vanguard. I referenced it earlier, but that was his name within the cult. This group also, they did 14 hours a day of what they called intensives. Those were these therapy classes that they were charging all this crazy amount of money for, which sounds a lot like Church of Scientology if you watched the documentaries about that or read the books or whatever. Now, Nightline interviewed Sarah Edmondson. We talked about her. She described this ritual that they did before they got their branding of this magical sigil. She said that they were first naked, blindfolded, put on the floor, and they actually thought they were going to get tattooed. And it sounds like a pretty horrific scene the way she described it. You know, people were kind of screaming. But then it was these women, as they talked about in the Justice Department, they were subservient to the men. And, you know, Rainier formed this harem. Now, and earlier, let me find it here in the Justice Department literature here. It says, Mac and other DOS masters recruited DOS slaves by telling them they were joining a women-only organization that would empower them and eradicate purported weaknesses that the Nexium curriculum taught were common in women. So if you're a feminist out there, you should be outraged by Keith Rainier. But yeah, these women were supposed to be subservient to the men. And, you know, these people were, it was a cult. There was this thing called Vanguard Week where people would fly in from all over the world and celebrate his birthday, which, by the way, is one of two satanic holidays. You've got Halloween and your birthday in the Church of Satan. Just saying. She also talked about how they used these special handshakes, and they would chant, and they had a ranking system, and do these rituals, and you couldn't question Vanguard. I mean, it's got all the makings of a good cult, okay? Laura Saltzman and Sarah Edmondson, they were approached to enter this new secret group, but talking about DOS, but they needed to provide the collateral first. They're supposed to send nudes. Now, the first step to this inner group, DOS, or The Vow, was that Sarah Edmondson was to be a slave to her master, Lauren Saltzman. Then, a doctor by the name of Danielle Roberts branded her after the whole, you know, naked blindfold thing. And there was this sigil put on of KR and AM, Keith Raniere, Allison Mack. That's supposedly what the initials stand for. Then Edmondson, she tried to file, after she left the group, talked to New York Times, she tried to file a complaint with New York State. And they actually said this was not malpractice. Okay. Big pharma. Big pharma gets to do what they want. Now, let's get down to the wrap-up here. This is what you came for here. All right, first I want to talk about, let's go ahead and confirm there is rampant sexual improprieties in the entertainment industry, okay? There's a documentary called An Open Secret. If you haven't watched that yet, please do. That will confirm everything. It uses kind of a couple examples only, but he uses the examples of Bryan Singer, the director of X-Men, and some of his buddies that were in this sort of group that would get child actors and do all kinds of foul things. But the sexual improprieties ties into a lot of these big time Hollywood elitist type folks. And it doesn't stop in Hollywood either. I mean, this is why there's all this talk about Pizzagate and all this, Franklin cover-up stuff with the politicians. These people, they can't stop messing around with the kids. What is this? Lolita Island, if you're familiar with that, Jeffrey Epstein has this rich guy's got so much money, he's got an island that they call Lolita Island, and he would private charter distinguished guests over there, like allegedly Donald Trump and Bill Clinton both went there. That's just what I've read online, allegedly. Look it up for yourself. Not on your work computer. Don't do it at work, for the love of God. And also, speaking of the island thing, Richard Branson, the owner of the Virgin deal, Sir Richard Branson, knighted. That knighting doesn't seem to be a good deal. Most of these people that get knighted, like Jimmy Savile, turn out to be pedos, but Richard Branson owned an island that NXIVM would rent to have parties on. Obviously, he's denying knowing anything about anything, but that's very curious, okay? Now, there's this big trend lately when these artists have been, artists that die, Avicii, the guy from Linkin Park, Chester, I think it's Benningfield, Chris Cornell from Soundgarden, Prodigy from Mobb Deep, they all died in the last couple years, and every time they die, these sort of fake news websites like Neon Nettle, and I don't know how fake news they are. They don't really cite proper information sometimes, but they all claim that each one of these artists were trying to expose this underground pedo ring, and that's why they died. Is it true? I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. That's just the argument. And there's an independent journalist named Liz Holden, who she's been talking about this stuff on everywhere. She's got a pretty big following. She's a big MAGA supporter. She's a big Trump supporter. So, like, I don't know if she didn't see that, like, Trump's name was on the docket on one of those flights to Lolita Island, or all of the sexual improprieties of Donnie. Whatever. I don't know. But I listened to a podcast she was on talking about NXIVM, and she cites an interview with Kelly Osbourne, the daughter to Ozzy, right? Papa don't preach, more like daughter don't sing. And Kelly was on tour with Ozzy Osbourne, and the band opening up for them, she said that they were messing with babies, I don't have the quote in my back pocket here, but like she said, the band playing with her dad was like into all these kids, and it freaked her out. And then sure enough, later the guy was actually convicted. And what she's talking about is this guy named Ian Watkins, and the band was called Lost Prophets, which was creepy because I did like sort of a half article on that, because I talked about it during Then this article about Peaches Geldof. Yeah, boy, we're gonna go down a side rabbit hole. Hang on. So Peaches Geldof, she was 25 and she died. Okay, she was one of these socialite Paris Hilton types, famous for not really doing anything, and because she was famous because of her dad, Bob Geldof. He was a big-time entertainer. He's the guy who co-wrote Do They Know It's Christmas? Again, granted as a knight by Queen Elizabeth. He married Paula Yates in 1986 and had two daughters, one of which was Peaches, okay? Now, his wife, Paula Yates, who is Peaches' mother, they got divorced, and she actually ended up hooking up with INXS's Michael Hutchins. And then about a year later, Michael Hutchins was found dead in the hotel room. And it was controversial because the coroner ruled it a suicide. But the evidence, coupled with Yates' statements, all claim or point to an accidental death by autoerotic asphyxiation. Now, some people claim that that is the way they kill you, such that it's an embarrassing way to go. Little insult to injury, as it were. Now, Yates suggested that Bob, who is, again, Peach's father, was involved with the death of Hutchins, quoting threats made by him, where he was saying that he's above the law. And he was knighted, so that's something, right? And Yates said that Geldof was interfering with Paula bringing Peaches out to see him in Sydney, and that Hutchins said he was going to reach out to Bob, and, you know, this whole thing, right? And then, in 2000, Yates was found dead at her home from a heroin overdose. Now, what gets weird, and what really made me focus on this, was that Peaches actually claimed to be a Scientologist in 2009. And in April 2013, before she died, she tweeted an image of her tattoo that was of the OTO, Ordo Templi Orientis. That is the magical group run by Aleister Crowley at one time. It's all about ritual magic, so on and so forth. And she if you thought maybe people were making that up, she tweeted the message #93 #Thelema #OTO for all my fellow Thelemites on Instagram. Now, Peaches, and then here's another sort of side story, talking about this Ian Watkins guy from the Lost Prophets band. If you go to, there's an article on BBC where it talks about how Watkins was a sexual abuser of infants and that the mothers of these babies would let him do it. The article says, referring to two women standing alongside Watkins in the dock, Mr. Klee said both women sexually abused their own children and made them available to Watkins for him to abuse. The court was told how the abuse of the children by all parties was also evident in text messages. Watkins sent a text to one of the women saying, if you belong to me, so does your baby. Ugh, it's too much. This is the kind of shit that gives me nightmares, okay? So Peaches, an insider into the entertainment industry, actually tweeted the mother's names, which is pretty controversial, obviously. But that's basically, and then she died, okay? That's pretty bad, right? Pretty sketchy. And then if you look further into it, if you want to go deeper down the rabbit hole of that stuff, there was a article posted with some quotes about Bob Geldof, claiming he has an evil side. Tina Hutchins, former INXS's Michael Hutchins' sister, said during an interview with A Current Affair, I think he's Satan. Anyways, backing up. Point is, there's something sick going on in the upper echelons of our society with the entertainment industry, politicians, all kinds of stuff. The elitists, right? People that aren't just trying to grind out their 9-to-5s. I compiled a short little list here of recent, or not so recent, victims, perpetrators, or alleged perpetrators, We've got Morgan Freeman. That's new as of today. How are they going to get Morgan Freeman? Is there anybody left? Good night. Again, allegedly, there's been no jury on this yet. Anyways, here's the list. Morgan Freeman, Roman Polanski. He got an Oscar, by the way. Supposedly he like raped a 13-year-old in a hot tub or something like that. But it was the 70s, folks. Come on. No, that's the Polanski thing is a real weird thing. He's the guy who made the Rosemary's Baby, and his wife was Sharon Tate that the Manson family killed. We got Jerry Sandusky, Dennis Hastert, Bill Cosby, Corey Feldman, Corey Haim, Jeffrey Epstein, Franklin cover-up stuff, Kevin Spacey, Harvey Weinstein, Keisha, Mariah Carey, supposedly enslaved by Tommy Mottola. R. Kelly supposedly has a bunch of sex slaves and, you know, had his allegations of underage improprieties. Kai Jones from the Pussycat Dolls, who said that their group was subjected to this sort of prostitution ring. The guy from Glee, I don't know his name. And obviously, like, Michael Jackson. Something happened to Michael Jackson. I don't know what. So, anyways, there's all this weird stuff. And then we've got the Fappening. If you don't recall, I wrote an article about this, but the Fappening, or they called it Celebgate, it happened in September 2014, where hackers, supposedly hackers, released these nude selfies taken by celebrities, such as, but not limited to, Jennifer Lawrence, Mila Kunis, Kate Upton, Ariana Grande, Hayden Panettiere, Kim Kardashian, Vanessa Hudgens, Emma Watson, and Rihanna. Now, there were different conspiracy theories as to what happened here. Some people said the NSA did it because they're able to get into everybody's, you know, digital files. Some people say that the celebrities themselves did it in order to promote whatever, because any publicity is good publicity. In fact, Kim Kardashian became famous just for this exact thing, right? And what is almost prophetic, and again, I say almost, in the article I wrote, quote, another idea to support this is that the celebrities are doing it to stay relevant and trending. For instance, does anyone find it strange that Emma Watson is featured for being this voice of feminism right now with that UN ambassador speech she gave, and just days later she's the next target of the Fappening? So there you go, Emma Watson. That's who Allison Mack was trying to openly recruit on Twitter. And she was a target of the Fappening. Direct connection, illuminate, confirm. Supposedly, some other theories were, you know, the Illuminati they pull all the strings. So they have these photos and they pass them around amongst each other. And then in the article, I go through some MKUltra ideas. I don't want to repeat myself. And it's kind of interesting because I go through some of the celebrities that have gone crazy, and I actually profiled Margot Kidder specifically, who just passed away. Now, the thing about Margot Kidder was she was the victim of similar nudes being floated around. This is back in the day. It was for a magazine, though. So it begs the question of what is going on? Why are these women posing for these photos? Why are they getting out? In the article, I said, maybe these images aren't even what these celebs wanted to take. They could have been purposefully taken against their will. Perhaps the Illuminati used these images to pass around to one another in a sex ring of sorts. Or maybe they use it as a form of blackmail, and these celebs are not doing what they're told, so these photos mysteriously leaked. Boom! I mean, could that be it? Could that be the sad, sad truth? Now, the MKUltra thing is interesting because this group DOS, or the Val, they had the masters and the slaves, which is a lot of mental conditioning. In October 2017, Sarah Edmondson spoke out about the Nexium and the inner DOS stuff in that article in the New York Times. And, quote, she said, I didn't do that right. She said, quote, I wept the whole time. I disassociated out of my body. Quote. That is what the MK Ultra traumatic mind control stuff is about. They talk about this often. I talk about it often, the mental dissociation stuff, creating an alter, an amnesic barrier, whatever you want to call it. Now, in the New York Times article, it says several former members have asked state authorities to investigate the group practices, but officials have declined to pursue action. In July, Ms. Edmondson filed a complaint with the New York State Department of Health against Danielle Roberts. That's the doctor I talked about earlier. A licensed osteopath and follower of Mr. Rainier, who performed the branding, according to Ms. Edmondson and another woman. In a letter, the agency said it would not look into Dr. Roberts because she was not acting as Ms. Edmondson's doctor when the branding is said to have happened. Separately, a state police investigator told Ms. Edmondson that two other women that officials would not pursue their criminal complaint against Nexium because the actions had been consensual. State medical regulators had also declined to act on a complaint filed against another Nexium-affiliated physician, Brandon Porter. Dr. Porter, as part of an experiment, showed women graphically violent film clips while a brainwave machine and video camera recorded their reactions, according to two women who took part. Let's look into that a little bit. On Newsweek, they have an article, and it says, the resident physician of the Nexium sex cult has been charged by a state oversight board of conducting illegal human experiments. And it references the New York Post, and it says that this Dr. Brandon Porter forced actress Jennifer Cobelt to watch dismemberment and rape videos for a fright study he was conducting. Now, that is sort of like what we saw in A Clockwork Orange. It's this traumatic mind control stuff. Some people have claimed that they forced these young kids to watch animals be killed, that sort of thing. Dismemberment and rape videos is pretty disturbing. She said, he continued to film my reaction for at least 10 minutes as I just sat there dry heaving like I was going to puke and crying very hard. He failed me not only as a friend, but as the medical practitioner I had trusted on numerous occasions with my health while I was in New York. Now, if you read further about these actual clips, it says that the doctor is also accused of human subjects, an actual video of the horrific and brutal murders and dismemberment of four women by machetes, and violent film clips, including a male African-American being viciously stomped by a Nazi, a conscious male being forced to eat a portion of his own brain matter, and a graphic gang rape. And you gotta love the news. You gotta love the mainstream media, the journalists, the court systems. No one's asking where the hell he got these videos from or what happened to the victims of these videos. But, like, if that doesn't indicate MK Ultra mind control stuff, I don't know what does. Keith Rainier, he uses this alter ego of Vanguard. Again, this is a dissociative sort of thing. Perhaps he was subjected to this kind of thing. I don't know. Only he knows. Now, this group, DOS, or the Vow, makes me think of the Vow of Silence, the Illuminati Vow of Silence. It's this idea that there's a secret society, and the secrets have to be kept, or else punishment, which in this is the form of nudes and the collateral that they send. Recall that they were talking about they use special handshakes. That's like some Freemason stuff. They would do chantings and they had ranking systems and rituals. Finally, we're going to talk about the magical sigil or symbol or branding or initials or whatever they wanted to call this thing. Okay. The brand that sort of made this hit the mainstream news. If you go to the New York Times article, it says, not intended initially as my initials, but they rearranged it slightly for tribute. The primary meaning and design of the brand symbol has nothing to do with my initials. but it obviously looks sort of like a K there. And, you know, what really piqued my interest here is I listened to the last podcast on the left's episode about this. And on it, they say that it was that Rainier claims it was a magical symbol. Now, I haven't been able to confirm that. So until I know for sure, I'm not going to say that that's what the official claim was. Here, I'll play the clip real quick.
The initials, which didn't start as the initials, Keith Rainier immediately said, these were never supposed to be my initials. It was supposed to be a magic symbol I had created, but they slightly adjusted it to look like my symbols as a tribute to me.
Oh, really? Oh, what a coincidence.
So that's not exactly how I read it from the New York Times. I mean, that would make this way more intriguing if it really did say magic symbol. But if you go to timesunion.com, as an article about this, talking about Sarah Edmondson. And Edmondson said she was told it would be a tattoo and that the symbol was a Latin symbol for the elements. Now, that's curious in itself. Let me finish. She learned weeks later that the brand was actually the initials of Rainier and Mac, whom Edmondson's complaint identified as having started the secret women's group with Rainier. Now, when they say the elements, that could be the pentagram, the five-pointed star with the elements, you know, fire, air, wind, earth, and the spirit. But it's not a pentagram too much. I mean, if you look at it, you could suggest it could be a few things, right? I mean, what I see immediately is the compass and square of Freemasonry. You could also see the pentagram if you rearranged everything, right? Either way, it is a symbol or perhaps a sigil, perhaps magical, I don't know. Surely there'll be more about this as the weeks unfold. In October, they are planned to have a trial. According to the Justice Department's filing, it says October 1st, 2018. There are already TV shows planned to talk about this some more. I am confident that the media will be covering this in extensive detail, and there will be more revelations as the summer unfolds. But there you have it. That's a rough summary of everything that happened and how I see the connections with the Illuminati theories that we've been talking about so much in the past, MKUltra, the idea of mind control, and the different secret society things, alter egos, valve silence, all these things. The celebrity fappening thing is the most intriguing to me. The fact that they specifically called out Emma Watson in the articles that I've mentioned and the connections there are very strange. I was going to wait for more information to kind of reveal itself, but I wanted to release this because I've got so much compiled already. So there you have it. I hope that helps clear up some of this, and I hope it makes a little bit of sense through whatever lens or filter you want to look at this stuff through. Again, if you've got reviews, I'm reading them. iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, whatever your preference is. Thanks for listening. I'll see you in another time or dimension.